I've been banging on, as you well know, about inflation for a long time. And also, we're at the sting in the tail point now, where I've been saying for some time, I just don't think this is going to go down.
Hi, welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Jerry Alexander, and today I'm rejoined by Adam Lawrence. Hi, Adam.
Thanks for having me again, Jerry.
Yeah, it's brilliant to see you. We're going to talk about budget stuff. It was last week.
Yep.
So we're just going to touch on some of those things that are going to maybe affect the listeners. Some of the things that are in the small print. And Adam, with your eagle eye, just trying to work out the direction to travel here, right? But before we get started, maybe you could just remind those that haven't heard you before, sorry, those that have heard before and those that don't know you, Adam, what you get up to on a day-to-day basis.
So I've done what's now approaching 700 odd deals in the UK property market over the past just over decade plus. Didn't realize what a good time I was having while everything was so stable before COVID, you know. About 85% resi, 15% commercial, but that might belie my sort of mindset and the way I run the group as well a little bit, because I've had a very much a commercial mindset. So a lot of the resi would have lease arrangements in place to RPs and things like that. So tried to use as much of a commercial approach as possible. But I like the underlying resi asset, and I've got good at buying houses, and I've not got good at buying sheds yet. So still working on it, Jerry.
It's not all sheds.
No.
But Adam, you know, I don't imagine you're popping down to the local estate agent buying single let units.
Right. No, to be fair, agency relationships are few and far between these days. There are a very, very small handful of stuff we'll get from open market, just because it's quite hard work for what it is. I wouldn't say never, especially since some of the data tools have really moved forward on that front.
Yeah,
it's definitely possible to do that. But of course, we're looking at off market, we're looking at auction, we're looking at direct to vendor, generally speaking, and also just through my own network, you know, I buy a lot from traders, sources as well. So yeah, more of the what most people on the street don't understand, but your listeners will be familiar with, Jerry.
Yeah, so it's all to do with network, right? That's all connections, which takes time to build up.
It does. It does. I'd say 80% plus of what I do these days has come through a connection. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Okay. So let's turn our focus onto the budget. And maybe the way to start that would be actually on your own personal situation. Just what are some of the things that came out from the budget and thought, that means I may have to just slightly alter things, or maybe you were anticipating them. But what sort of things are coming into effect your day to day?
So I think there was the anticipated and the non-anticipated. And you know, as the self-employed, we haven't had a lot of relief of late. If you use limited companies and control your drawdowns like most do,
yep,
and stick to dividends, you'll know that the last sort of probably 10 to 12 years has been a litany of chops and cuts, and we've yes, got worse and worse off. National insurance, we don't really benefit because that's priced into our dividend tax allowance, yet the dividend tax allowance hasn't gone down.
Yep.
So not quite sure how they reconcile all of that. But of course, there's just too many. The tax system's so complicated, there's so many moving parts and chess pieces, they can't make it add up. So frozen tax thresholds are my big bugbear at the moment, Jerry, and they are obviously still frozen. There's a lot of money coming towards the Treasury if they dare to hold those until 2028, 29.
Yeah.
I've been banging on, as you well know, about inflation for a long time. And also, we're at the sting in the tail point now, where I've been saying for some time, I just don't think this is going to go down as quickly as everyone's thinking. And, you know, we're sitting here just after this budget with, you know, minimum wage rises of 10% heading towards, you know, services inflation 6.5%, wage inflation still above 6% in the UK. This is not a 2% inflation cocktail that we're drinking from here.
Yes.
So that has obviously led to, that means more and more stealth tax effectively, certainly for me and for all of us, because if you, I think you tend when you're self-employed to go to the level of your comfort. If you're lucky enough to be able to draw down profits, it's the point at which it hurts so much you say, look, I'm not paying any more. And those thresholds aren't moving. So that hurts, Jerry, to be honest, at the moment.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And there's obviously ways to try and maybe offset that a little bit by putting it somewhere else, but you're not actually getting it yourself. So you might put it into a SAS pension, as an example.
But, and that's one bit we have had. You're quite right. When we got that, that was last budget, wasn't it? Yeah. But the 40 to 60K allowance is definitely helpful. And in a perverse way, you know, if you're looking at, if you're paying corporation tax at 25 and then dividend tax at 33.75, so not at the top rate, but just the higher rate,
yeah,
which I'm sure that would fit the profile of a few of your listeners as well, that's over 50% tax. Whereas if you can put it into the SAS and get 50% back via a loan back, you keep the tax for free as an investment. I mean, yeah, it really is that crazy these days.
It is so, that crazy, isn't it? I did the numbers. If you actually paid yourself now, obviously in Scotland and England, that the income tax is different now because we love to do things differently.
You like an extra percent. And more complicated. Yeah, they're even more. Yeah.
Let's not go too political. So with the national insurance contribution, because obviously as an employer of yourself, if you're doing it that way, you still have to pay 13.8% in national insurance if you're paying yourself a salary. And actually, when you add it all up, the pension contribution, it's 28.8% to pay yourself. I appreciate there's an allowance in there, right? But 28.8% to pay yourself before you start talking about income tax. It's just completely insane, isn't it?
It really, really is. And I'm surprised at how much they have tried to, I'm surprised and not surprised about how much they've tried to push onto the businesses on that side of things. But it's one of these vast incongruences that exist, because on the one hand, Jeremy Hunt's talking about productivity. And on the other hand, no one's there sort of saying, hold on, Jeremy, how do you define productivity? Well, it's output over cost of input. And what you're saying is cost of input, as everybody knows, has gone up massively. And he's pushing them up even more, because even the cheaper stuff are, and you're left with, well, I need to get rid of people, or you end up with, there's a really perverse situation at the moment where some people, if you've got two kids and you're getting the childcare support, you're worse off on up to 134K than you are on 99K. Yeah. So I actually know a couple of anecdotal examples of people in my network who are 150K a year earners, but at the moment they're working 3 day weeks and earning 90, because the tax system is so punitive at that 100 to 135 level. They're paying 75% tax. I mean, and people aren't going to work for 75% tax. We kind of knew that from the 1970s, right? We don't need to learn that lesson again.
Right, we're not going to have this as a totally negative podcast, right?
Absolutely. If anybody's still listening after that, yeah.
We're just trying to be pragmatic about it. And there's a silver lining there with the pension, like you said. What else has, I mean, at the end of the day, there are a couple of other things, though, that are going to affect people. And one of those is, in Scotland, we have the additional dwelling supplement. And the initial announcement of the budget doesn't have affect Scotland, but we will like to do it our own way with a cherry on top. So basically, in England, let's just quickly talk about that. If you're looking at buying multiple purchasing multiple properties at the same time, what's changed there?
So the multiple dwellings relief, which they have, I think, semi-correctly identified as sometimes subject to abuse. So the way this was working was, you buy a very nice property, it happens to have what maybe one day was servants' quarters or a granny annex or a glorified shed in the back garden. And because it's self-contained, you claim multiple dwellings relief to lower your stamp duty allowance. Now, I'm on completely the other side of the spectrum for that. I've used MDR, you know, over a dozen times, and every time it's left more money in the deal, which has meant my offer to the vendor can be a bit better than it otherwise would have been.
Yeah.
So if you take that multiple dwelling, so just to clarify, at the moment in England, if you buy six properties or more, if you buy two properties or more, then you have an option to elect for what's called multiple dwellings relief. This goes away in June. So you can effectively, it's not quite as simple as this, so please understand this isn't direct tax advice, but you can effectively take the aggregate sum of that purchase, and then you can divide it by the number of dwellings, and then that can be the price at which stamp duty is applied on, multiplied by the. So instead of paying the £1 million rate, which starts getting up into the 8%, 10%, 12% rates, if there were six dwellings involved, it's seen as 6 times 166666, and therefore it comes down to only the 3% rate. So quite dramatic on portfolio disposals, because it's going to take more money out of the equation. And the bigger the disposal, and there's no clever way around this. You know, this is linked transactions, which basically means, you know, it's you, your business partner, your wife, the hairdresser's dog, the whole lot is a linked transaction. The amount of time between them, you could sell me a property and you could sell me another one 20 years later, and that's still a linked transaction. So there there's no loopholes in this one. And therefore, the stamp just gets aggregated as time goes along. And the purchase prices are aggregated over time to calculate the stamp. Yep. So the bigger the portfolio, obviously, the more you're getting into the very high rates of stamp duty. You can still elect for the commercial rate, which is available for, or the non-residential rate, as it's technically called, which is available for transactions of 6 properties or more. But of course, the marginal rate of SDLT there is 5%. So instead of the 3%, it goes to 5%. So it's an extra 2% out of the deal on everything above 250K. So on a big disposal, on 10 million disposal, you know, it's another 200 grand that's walking out of out of the deal somewhere.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? I mean, in Scotland, we have 6 properties or more. There isn't anything below that for the additional dwelling supplement and reducing that, because it's seen as more commercial because you're buying 6 and you know, that does sound more like a business than buying 1 or 2, right? But I'd be so surprised if we don't alter our own one, and as I say, it'll be in a different way, of course, but
they see it as free money, don't they? They're seeing it as free money, and I think it was about 384 million that he identified would be raised. And they're expecting to lose no business from doing this. And you know what? They're probably right. But the more frictional costs you put in, what it does actually is it drives behavior much more into, if property's already in a limited company, make sure you transact within the limited company.
Yep.
Because then both Scotland and England are synced with their 0.5% rate for sale of shares stamp duty.
Let's just actually now, we'll just move on slightly from that, because there was a mention about capital gains tax dropping.
Yeah, so there's probably the give with one hand, take with the other here. Yeah. You know, he's dropped the higher rate, which is already discriminatory and quite unfair, really, for property, from 28 to 24. So that's a positive. So perhaps the 2% that's come out of the deal, maybe the vendor's thinking, well, I'm getting 4% back on the seat. Doesn't quite work out like that, but
there is not quite, though, because it's not the whole right.
There are numbers that tend to fascinate people around tax and around the sort of 20 to 25% level. And you can see this in the way the Conservatives have put together this tapestry of tax.
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across. And believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
Changes over the last sort of 15 years. You know, they felt comfortable putting corporation tax to 25% because they're just about at the level where people don't go, it doesn't start to disincentivize too much. So 24, although it only feels like 4%, I think psychologically it's an interesting choice. But of course, he's leaving the lower rate of CGT at 18%. So instead of 10%, which it would be on the sale of shares and things like that. So, I mean, I don't know why anybody who was on top of the housing market, and of course, it's not necessarily the Treasury's problem here, but why would you make an excuse for landlords to dispose even more at this time? Because if those properties go, and a lot of, remember, still 1, 2, and 3 properties that what most landlords own, you know, okay, great news, they go into the owner occupier sector, but what about the tenants? What about the rental properties? There's already a vast shortage of. It's just going to push rents up even more, this sort of stuff. So you look, plenty of reasons to sell at the moment, haven't you? Labour are getting elected, people, it's not about the information, it's about the fear, and it's about the speculation, and people will fill that void and just go, actually it is now. Market's getting a bit healthier, right? Had a missed my chance in sort of late 21, early 22 to get rid of really top money, but actually hasn't come down that much. And now it's looking like the exit door really looks quite inviting.
Yeah, yeah. So, certainly from the point of view of, you know, taking some money off the table, and there's no such thing as a bad profit, right? So,
sure.
You know, but on the capital gains thing, I mean, the thing to remember, of course, there is that capital gains, again, is back to owning it in private hands. If you've got it in a company, you don't really get that. It's corporation tax. We're back to that again. So if capital gains debt kept coming down, then that is does start making you consider, what am I investing in? And more importantly, how long am I investing in it? And actually, am I going to get better returns if I'm flipping, doing it in the other part? It's just, it's constantly moving feast. But of course, that's why we have so many accountants in the country, right?
keeps them in clover, doesn't it, Joe? Keeps them in clover.
Yeah. So what else should we talk about? There was the service accommodation.
Yes, the furnished holiday let stuff, absolutely. So obviously there's rumblings and various, we've got multiple bits of property legislation attempting to make their way through the Commons, haven't we, at the moment, in terms of leasehold reform, in terms of renters reform bill. And there's been rumblings from Gove about changing what's going on with SA in general. Now,
yeah,
of the three, you would think that's the least politically expedient. I can't see the logic or the case for that being done before the election. I really can't. And then I can see it getting dropped after the election, really. I'm not really sure politically what's driving them there, if I'm honest.
Yep.
So this coming in, well, so obviously there has been speculation that there might be an Article 4 kind of direction around stopping you from using permitted development to service. There's already 50 million different planning arguments to use with short yeah. letters, I'm sure many of your listeners will know anyway. But this is the removal of the tax relief. So one of the more recent that come to the fore, why would people who've got property in their personal name switch to SA? Chance of capital allowances has been one thing, and then removing them from the Section 24 of the Finance Act problem so that they could fully expense their mortgage interest.
A huge incentive.
Massive. And you know, people who are struggling to break even anyway, especially with interest rates where they are losing money after they've paid their turnover tax or whatever you want to call it. So yeah. Massive incentive. So this is brand again to bring some more units back into the PRS and shorten the amount of stuff there is in the service accommodation market. So if you've got existing SAs, well, first of all, if they're rent to rents, you're going to need to check what the position of your landlord is, apart from anything else. And I'm sure there'll be misinformation around this for months and years to come, unfortunately. But this is going to drive a few more units probably back into the PRS, or more likely, it's going to drive them to be sold, I think.
Yes.
Because they're closing those last few doors. Whether it's prep for what they're intending on doing with the legislation, I can't work out how it is. I did have a think about that, but
yeah, I mean, where we are right now in the political cycle, I can't see much. I mean, at the best of times, there's not that much forward planning, right? But I mean, where we are in the cycle right now, are they planning three steps that are going to take place in years 3, 4, 5, the next? Probably not.
No.
Right now, it's all about survival.
You never know. Sometimes you get one minister who is competent of the few ministers who left who are competent, who's driving a certain agenda that we've not necessarily had communicated to us.
Sure.
But yeah, I see the legislation bit on the shelf and the FHL stuff. Look, it's bad news for people who've tried that to get around. I've known portfolio landlords who've still got stuff in their own name. They haven't wanted to incorporate. They haven't liked a lot of the solutions. Obviously, it's kicked off in the incorporation world in the last, you know, 6 to 9 months in terms of a few bits that, again, I'm sure everyone will be aware of. So there's lots of landlords sitting there who haven't incorporated going, well, this is why I didn't incorporate in the first place. And now they've got no idea where to turn. And then SA as a potential door, and then it's now slammed in the face. So, yeah difficult.
Difficult. It is difficult, yeah. Challenging to navigate. What's your feelings on that next step on, because obviously a lot of people did incorporate, or certainly those that were entering the market or continuing to buy were buying in limited companies. And because that's such a, not an easy thing to do, because obviously swapping over to that is difficult, but it's an easy thing moving forward to not avoid tax, but to work, circumnavigate that tax. What's your feeling on how long that will be left alone?
Well, I mean, remember, avoid is legal, so avoid is okay. Might not like the HMRC might not like the word, but the difference in avoidance and evasion is one is legal and the other one isn't, yes. Right? So I think I rather frame it as control of drawdowns and things like that. That's normally a better way to look at it. I think the bugbear I have with incorporation is that Section 162 as it stands and incorporation relief, there's no real problem there. As long as you pass the acid tests, you're fine, right? So it's the other bits of sugar that have been put in the tea or something, sure, high-grade yes. structures and stuff yes, like okay. that.
You mean to make the actual move from one to the other, you mean? Yeah,
okay. So it's baby in the bathwater stuff. Yeah. You know, people shouldn't be put off from incorporating, but using a scheme or a scheme that doesn't call itself a scheme, it's never a good idea in any area of tax. It wasn't a good idea here, and it's still not a good idea. I mean, it's as simple as that. So that's the one side of that, which I think it's really important to say.
Yeah, so that's the side of the rumblings that you were talking about is people that over the last few years that have done that incorporating in maybe different methods. They've gone around and found, they've kept asking different accountants, and they finally found an accountant and a lawyer who said, yes, you can do it that way. And they've gone and done it that way. And now that's starting to maybe make its way towards the courts, I would imagine.
Who would have thought Acme Pay No Tax accountants would cause a problem? But there you go. it's all about, you know, I think for people who aren't interested in reading long pages of stamp duty manuals and tax law and some of the stuff I do, because I'm so exciting on a Friday night or whatever. All I'd say is just remember the HMRC use the duck test. You know, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So if you're going to start doing things that are blatantly not for a commercial or reasonable reason, then expect to get picked up and use that as your basis for making decisions when someone sells you a salty tax solution.
Just to go down that route for a little bit further, my question was around the limited companies, and obviously you get tax, you get interest rate relief from there. And to do a blanket change on that in limited companies to crack a nut is going to be insane. But it could be, they could say, for residential properties held, you know, they could be quite specific to try and remove that. What's your thoughts on that?
I've looked at this over the years because the first thing people said in 2015 was, well, there's no point using companies because it'll all be the same in a company soon. And I thought, well, let's have a look at this, you know, because you'll know that in Ireland, they introduced a version of a Section 24 many years ago, and then they reversed it because it seriously impacted supply, right? In Germany, there is something around tax relief in companies. So there is precedent in the Western world for not allowing full, so effectively the same as a Section 24, where there's only a 20% relief rather than a higher rate relief. In Germany, it only affects corporates over a certain size. Okay. My position is pretty similar to where it's always been in this, in as much as I saw, if we go back to 2015 and George Osborne and that budget that caused all those problems, you know, there was one really very clear message for me in that, and that was go big or go home, yes. Right? And that's what George wanted. And then it turned out maybe George was going to be on the board at BlackRock or whatever, and that's jolly nice for George. But Cameron and Osborne were big, big fans of big corporates, right? And probably Nick Clegg, you could argue as well, you know, whistled into a job at Facebook very nicely. So 2010 to 2016 was categorized by real big fans of really big business, which I think probably only helps a very small percentage of the population, right? I think since then, although the leaders we've had have had their faults and there's lots and lots of them, we have moved more to a smaller business mentality, and they want transparent. Why do the government like companies? They like the transparency. They like the ease of collecting tax. Like you said, they like the way that without anybody, the employees don't see it, but the employers are paying a fortune before we even think about income taxes and things like that. That's all very orderly, and they'd much prefer to collect tax from a million companies than 70 million individuals or whatever. So I don't know that they're going to want to upset that apple cart. And I don't know that if it is the Labour administration coming in, I don't know that Labour would particularly want to change that. They want to win businesses round. They've got rather than the team of Skeletor and whatever you want to call John McDonnell, they've got, you know, a credible team. Rachel Reeves is an economist that, you know, people like Mark Carney have endorsed. You know, she's by no means a communist lunatic like McDonnell was. And Starmer, you know, he's so middle of the road, you can barely tell that he's there or much different from Sunak, can you, to be honest? So Tony Blair minus the charisma. I mean, it's an interesting proposition, but probably a proposition that will limp into 10 Downing Street. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to want to offend and ostracize business, I don't think. And they also, interestingly, I think from taking the temperature over the last sort of 12 months or so, even the fairly aggressive left have started to come around to the knowledge that, hold on, private rental sector has stopped growing. Well, it's actually shrinking. You know, why are these rents going so mad? Well, it's the interest rate. Well, okay, yeah, of course, but also it's the shortage of stock. And then what's happened to net migration? Well, we all know it's seven figures worth of net migrants in 2 years. Where do all the migrants go? They have to go into the rental sector, or they have to stay with friends or family. There's nowhere else for them to go. They're not going to come in and buy. Well, you come from Hong Kong, you might be able to buy a nice house with the average £350,000 net worth your average B&O scheme applicant comes through. But that's a one-off rarity, really, which I absolutely welcome because it means more tax take for the country, apart from anything else. But there we go. There we go.
That's where our growth's coming from, right?
Well, definitely. In terms of if you can bring over, you know, average household being worth 750K or whatever, that's going to generate tax. Someone in that household is getting paid a lot of money somewhere, which is going to be employers' national insurance, et cetera. You know, big skill set. And someone else is probably going to be contributing to the community in other ways or working another job that's adding some value, you know?
It's really difficult to have this conversation without talking politics, of course. I mean, apart from anything else, the budget's come from the political establishment, right? And there's a direction to travel with the current election process that people seem to feel, you know, this is probably what's going to happen. And a change is certainly something that I think most people would welcome, because if you're in the same, Scotland's the same. We've had the same government for so long. You just kind of run out of steam. Whether you politically align with that government or not, having some change is definitely something that's helpful every now and then. But what's interesting is the arguments for or the outlying kind of we must, you know, vote for us and we're going to do X, Y, Z, which are really sometimes quite extreme suggestions. But as the polls come back and things become a bit more positive for you, you become less extreme and more centralist, right? So a lot of the stuff you're talking about now, the policies, some of those outlandish ones have disappeared. We're becoming a bit more pragmatic. We're talking because we've now got their attention. We can now actually start talking sense. So it seems that we're kind of easing our way now into, there's potentially going to be a change of regime, but not a hugely radically different one, which is what's been proposed for the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, big difference from it. I think there's still fear in certain parts of those who would massively favour the right rather than the left, that Starmer's going to be got rid of, and he's a bit of a front man, and then they get rid of him. Bang. I mean, for those who haven't listened to it, Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart, while we're talking politics, have a great podcast called The Rest Is Politics, and they have a side podcast that's called Leading. So they interview leaders, and they've done one with Angela Rayner. And I thought, right, I'm going to put myself through this and listen to it with an open mind as much as possible.
Yes.
And the first 20 minutes were very, very difficult. I'm not going to lie. But actually, I ended up with a lot of admiration for her because she's so politically clever. She's very dangerous. That's the conclusion I came to, because she understands her audience really well. She understands who she's communicating with. And she went from this person who was ultimately a supporter of Jeremy Corbyn, which she explains away by saying, well, you either had to support him or get out of the party. And I didn't want to get out of the party, so I was going to support him. And now she roundly criticizes a lot of what he did, which is pretty much the same way that Starmer goes about it, to be honest. But do you trust what Angela Rayner says to be the answer? I don't. Look, again, trying to spin some positives out of this. They're talking about trying to build 1.5 million houses. They're not going to be able to deliver that in the public sector. It's not going to be possible.
Nope.
So that's private sector opportunity right there, funded by public money. Someone, hopefully on the smaller side of developers, are going to be given some chances to build.
There's no large German build-to-rent companies coming in.
The thing about build-to-rent is so much of it is not really not the housing that anybody would really want, particularly. It's just the housing that returns the best yield.
Yeah.
Right. So if Patrizia, or not to pick on them, or whoever, you know, want to go and do stuff like that, well, it works for their IRRs and all the rest of it, and that's fine. But it's not really doing anything to the number of people who are in temporary accommodation at the moment. It's not really doing anything for people who want a family home near a school with a good or outstanding Ofsted rating. You know, it's not solving, build to rent's never going to solve those problems in reality. So that's got to be publicly funded, privately provided. And the other positive is they also look at, you know, Labour governments have formed for easing the planning process. It's actually Conservative administrations that tend to keep the planning process as clamped down as possible, because they're, largely speaking, pandering to relatively NIMBY-ish voters in certain parts of UK, you know, without getting regionally offensive.
That's not in our own back garden. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're just one other thing that came out, just pull us back to the budget. Mm-hmm. One thing that seemed to be omitted, wasn't discussed, was the PD discussion that we had back in November about, and this does really affect England rather than Scotland, but what's your thoughts on that? It just went a bit quiet, didn't it?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of what we were saying around what bills are going through Parliament at the moment and what's expeditious and what's politically expedient and what's going to win, this is typical, isn't it? One announcement made. I mean, if you rode back, I think probably four statements now, we were talking about free ports and all the rest of it.
Yes.
And there's a bit of noise over it. Sounded really good, right? Sounded like this is the old Boris says we can be like Singapore, jolly good. Well, we all know that we can't, but can we take some of the good bits out of the Singapore model and make them work in the UK? It looked like can it be part of levelling up? All look really, really positive, quiet as anything. Absolute tumbleweed. So I don't know what the percentage is in terms of things that get announced that don't actually go through or end up making it. But again, I think it's just going to stay on the shelf at this point, because where are the priorities at the moment? I mean, you'd have to think, wouldn't you, that the incumbents have got a rough idea when they're calling the election, right? And although there was this ridiculous speculation it was coming, you know, early on in the year, I was thinking, at what point is a poll
going to even look that way? Yes.
Let's go for it, guys. It's clinging on by the fingernails, and it's, you know, it's Q3, Q4. If it's January 2025, then it just looks awful. But I mean, there might be a people are focusing a lot on Sunak is unpopular, right? And he's getting all the blame for what a couple of the idiots before him did, realistically. Mm-hmm. Not that he's been blameless by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he's carried the can in a pretty tough time. And I think him and Jeremy Hunt have done a pretty good job, as a rule, to be honest with you. So from an economic perspective,
it's been a lot more chaotic than it has been. Yeah,
absolutely. And really calmed the ship down. You know, still remember the international bond markets were ready to charge us, you know, goodness knows what, to borrow any money, which would be problematic when you've got as much debt as the UK has, you know. So I think they know when they're going to call the election, and they're working towards that. And most of their resource at the moment is going to be thinking about, and quite literally the decision matrix will be, it comes across an MP's desk, is that anything that's going to help me get re-elected? Right, yes or no? No, forget about it.
Yep.
Not interested. So, yeah, I think, you know, they've probably got to preserve where the conferences are in the conference season, because it's an important fundraising time, important pressing of the flesh time. So does Jeremy Hunt want one more budget? I mean, he can have one, but will the changes kick in time? He could try and use it as a message of things to come. Sure. They've already tried this, haven't they? We're trying to get rid of national insurance. You know, it's all a bit of a con. It's like, well, yeah, it is the system you guys put in place, but okay, I know what you mean. So does one more, do people want to hear more sound bites, or is it going to be on how people feel in their pocket, really? And I think probably the latter, as a rule, probably the latter.
Okay, so just to round off, Adam, we feel that we're probably in an area of political sound bites. There's not a clear direction to travel apart from anything else. There may be from the Conservatives, but from Labour that might be slightly different. What's your just coming back to property investing? What's your current position on where we're at between now and December, and then years time or whatever? What's your, you know, carry on business as usual, sitting on your hands, selling everything and moving to Singapore? What's your
Definitely not the second or the third. I detest sitting on my hands. You know, sitting on your hands when you already own stuff for your existing stock, not over tweaking it, that all makes sense. But not doing new stuff, that would drive me mad, Jerry. I couldn't do that. Yeah. So I think realistically, election years as a rule tend to offer opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And where the budget, you can imagine how some of that stuff we've discussed with the budget can be used in your communication with vendors. You know, oh, Labour are probably going to put capital gains tax up to 30%. You'll be able to find a headline in the Telegraph
somewhere, yeah.
That all day, right? So why not sell it now while you can still, you know, you've got that extra money in the pocket. There's going to be good points for, oh, did you know this? If we can do the transaction before June, we can still get the multiple dwellings relief. I can give you an extra 10 grand. There'll be transactions out there that can be done like that. But the traditional way, because people are quite linear, and it's a pattern that repeats itself in election years, you know, transactions, as in sale agreed transactions, start to drop as soon as the election is announced, the date of the election is announced. Yep. So that's the point at which, being the contrarian that I am, we'll be absolutely ramping up activity and saying, look, we're still buying. I know everyone else is really nervous, because if you went through the proper decision matrix here and went through the game theory of it, what's the worst thing that Labour are going to do? Yeah. Are they going to be more hostile than the Conservatives have been over the past 9 years to property owners and landlords? Be quite difficult, wouldn't it, realistically? Yeah. So are you just scared of the boogeyman? Are you scared of your shadow? You know, because it's not Jeremy Corbyn anymore. You know, it's a centrist. And you said it earlier, you know, we win elections from the centre. You know, you speak to people in the centre, you don't worry too much about the fringes. There's the occasional call out to generate some headlines or whatever, but that's about it, you know. So I think be ready to transact, be financially attractive. It's not the worst time in the world to be re-gearing stuff. If you can make it work over a five-year term, you know, get the war chest ready. And then when everybody goes to sleep, if we get, say, a 12-week lead into the election, and we might get 6, we might get 8, we might get 12, we could get as little as 3 in the legislation, but there's likely to be a period of a couple of months, which could be a really purple patch for agreeing some deals. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, if they haven't transacted by the time you get to the election, you've almost still got a bit of an option anyway. But everyone would rather, or not everyone, but Joe Public would rather sit and wait and see what happens. And some people like certainty, you know, and I don't think you need certainty, particularly at this time. I'm pretty certain this is the way it's going to play out already anyway. Inflation's still a big backdrop, a big tailwind in terms of pricing. Wage rises are still a big tailwind, right? What's pushing property prices down, apart from the big forecasters saying that they're going to go down, which they keep getting summarily so wrong, it's a joke, to be honest, you know?
That's what we discussed last time, wasn't it? Just that the Bank of England's forecasting has been so atrocious.
And, you know, Office for Budgetary Responsibility still think prices will go down 4.7% this year. Halifax said minus 4%. And on their own index, they're already up 1.3% by February. Yeah. So they've got, these people beg a belief, but because they never go back and hold themselves accountable.
There is no accountability.
It's only boring people like me that do. They get away with it and they get away. And they've got, I don't know whether they just throw it at a dartboard or how they do it, but it just makes no sense to me. There's no logical sense behind what they're saying.
Right. Okay, Adam. I think we've had a reasonably balanced discussion there. There's some positivity there.
Definitely. Oh, look, I should say, in terms of injecting a bit of positivity at the end, you know, I've not been this bullish over resi prices ever since I've started being involved in property. Now, a lot of that is driven by this inflation and wage inflation thing in the background, and that's making the nominal. But that's all right, because we like nominal price increases, because we get nominal price fixed debt. So it's great news. And on the commercial side of things, you know, we've seen a big wobble with the rates. Rates are probably coming down relatively slowly, would be the ideal world, but the point is they're going in the right direction. So yields, which compressed for 30 years, then expanded very, very quickly, which didn't cause anywhere near the problems that it could have done, are now going to start, in my opinion, trending back to that long-term mean, and they're going to start compressing again. So it's that little bit of following wind you've got on all your commercial deals as well, which is ideal. Not to the tune where you can sit and wait for the rate to go down before you start refinancing stuff, sadly. But if it works on these rates today, in 5 years' time when you come to refix, if you're using a five-year cycle, I think you can be pretty confident things will look better.
Yep.
Rents will be up because of inflation and capital values will be up and yield compression will have worked its magic again, you know?
As long as you've got that mechanism there in your leases or whatever to be able to adjust your rentals, then you know, you don't have to wait 5 years for that to come into effect,
no.
Right?
No, absolutely. Yep. So there's quite a bit of stuff we did last year to, which was more like keeping the lights on business to an extent because the rates were so high, was to say, blimey, year one looks like break even, year two doesn't really get me out of bed, but year three, four and five look okay, as long as my rent progression, you know, metrics and everything look right, and I've got those clauses in the leases or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because you know, the inflationary stuff, ultimately, in the day, the fundamentals are you've got leverage in there, you've bought more assets, the inflation should ultimately work through in your favor.
Yeah,
in your favor. The only challenge is the time lag, and can you mitigate the challenges on the time lag? Because that's inflation right. Goes first, then the other stuff starts catching up later, as you've just described.
But remember, you know, number one beneficiary of inflation, right, who can never say that they are, the government, especially at times like this when they've got the tax thresholds frozen. Yep. Their forecast for how much the tax take is going to go up are oops. If you were running a business like that, you'd be accused of price gouging. It's as simple as that. The forecasts look magnificent, right? Second best people to take advantage of inflation, second best position in the economy, property owners.
Yeah, borrowers right? on that, yeah.
So very bullish, really. An incredibly bullish ending, really, Jerry, to be honest.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam. Perfect note. Right, till next time, sir. Thank you so much for joining us.
I look forward to it, and thanks for having
me. Actually, Adam. Let me back up for a second. People, those that are interested in economics in particular, just tell us a little bit about some of the stuff you do where people can learn more about how you think and how you visualize the market and what you think economically are the indicators people need to keep looking at.
Thank you for that. We got so excited by the market that's coming that we
forgot. Yes, it was such a great ending, but we need to talk about how people can find you.
For sure. So I have a YouTube channel called Proponomics with Adam Lawrence, which, as you can see, I've cleverly mashed together property and economics. And the point is, I write my thoughts down and I also record them in an audio file so anyone can listen along. It's published free to air, comes out 6:30 a.m. every Sunday. I look at all aspects of the macro economy and then how that filters down into what does that mean for prices? And then really importantly, what should we be doing as individual investors? And I share some of the stuff that I'm doing so that people can, if they want to, criticize, use that to inform their strategy, whatever, whatever. So, you know, 2022, I was saying, look, I'm fixing a lot of stuff now. I'm breaking mortgages. I'm fixing. The rates are going to go up. Be careful. And then sure enough, they went up way more than I thought they were going to do. But I was very glad that I'd done that. And over the years, I've had lots of good feedback from people saying, thank you for sharing that, because I went and fixed this big loan and it kept me in the game and stuff like that, you know. So that's what I do on the free to air side of things. Like I say, every Sunday, we also have a live that comes out on my LinkedIn. So my LinkedIn, Adam G. Lawrence. I also try and share as much as I can that's of relevance and interest and give a bit of commentary around mostly property related, but some economic stuff as well. So there's quite a lot of stuff on my LinkedIn. And then I run the Boardroom Club alongside my business partner, Rod Turner. So that's a consultancy that works with either or both of commercial and residential developers, investors. We have a very different profile of people. They come along and join. We provide strategic consultancy all the way down to, so we build a strategic plan all the way down to the nuts and bolts. What have you got to be doing every day in order to make it work? And then when you've got a problem, which let's face it, it's property, right? So you've always got problems. You've got us there in order to help you solve it. So that's Boardroom Club. We also run a workshop. We're running four a year. So our first one was January. Our next one is the 24th of April. That's about property and business. And we're talking JVs, due diligence, mergers and acquisitions, and sharing a few case studies of some limited company, asset-backed limited companies that we've bought and stuff like that as well.
Fantastic. We'll try and summarize that in the show notes so people can find you easily. Thanks so much for joining us, Adam.
Thank you very much for having me, Jerry. Much appreciated.